Good evening. This is Franz Weinschenk wishing all of you great listeners to Valley Writers Read a very happy new year. Believe me, everyone here at the station, all of our staff and all the talented writers and readers who produce our show are more than eager to wish you a most happy, successful, and productive new year, the year 2014. And speaking of being happy and productive, that's what tonight's show is all about. It's all about the Masumoto family and their farm out there in Del Rey, which is located just a little southeast of Fresno. We're going to hear from a family headed by the well-published author David Mas Masumoto, who's certainly no stranger to most people in our valley, and also from his wife Marcy and their daughter Nikiko. All of them to tell us why they are so very much dedicated to their wonderful farm with its peach orchard and raisin-producing vineyard. And so, to start us off, here is David Mas Masumoto to tell us all about The Perfect Peach, Recipes and Stories from the Masumoto Family Farm.
The Perfect Peach, Recipes and Stories from the Masumoto Family Farm by Marcy, Nikiko, and Mas Masumoto. A literary cookbook, recipes with stories, a taste of a working family farm. A family farm shares the backstory of their farm, their work, their life that add to the flavor of their favorite 50 peach recipes. This narrative, combined with an authentic perspective from the fields, will create a tasteful combination of story and food. Join us as we, all three of our voices, perform a cookbook, sharing a personal insight into the life of peaches and family. Let's start with Losing Your Peach Virginity by Mas. People often celebrate firsts, the first time we experience something, an initial moment that changes us, the starting point between what was and what will be different for the rest of our lives. Simultaneously, we lose something, an innocence and naivete. We also gain something, an experience and awakening for our family. When we lost our peach virginity, we discovered peaches meant something beyond just eating. I was rather heavy as a child, kind of fat. Husky jeans fit my body. I enjoyed eating. Every summer, I loved to gorge myself with our best fruits. In our farm's packing shed, I did the simple chores a 10-year-old could do, mainly stamping our farm name on wooden boxes. That summer, I began my hunt for the perfect peach, overripe and very soft. One day I set a couple aside, demonstrating amazing patience for a kid, and kept searching for the right one. By late afternoon, I had chosen my champion. My mouth watered in anticipation. I held the huge treasure in my small hands and lifted it to my face. I remember the sequence. Teeth broke through the skin, juices squirted out, splashing the cheeks and an occasional bystander. The red fluids then painted my face and gathered on my chin before dripping. My white t-shirt collected my peach drool, especially where my robust tummy stuck out. All my shirts that summer had the same peach stain, a badge of honor for a farm kid growing up around perfect peaches. When Nikiko, our daughter, was 13, we followed our peaches to market. At home, we had packed and shipped a small quantity of the best to some of the finest restaurants in the state. Nikiko was confused by our fanatical quality standards. She knew most of our fruits were very good, but why the fuss about greatness? We then visited one of these restaurants, and in its kitchen, we met the staff and watched them prep for that evening meal. Nikiko witnessed something we could never convey. A single peach was placed stem side down in the center of a white plate. Just before serving, the pastry chef would add a quick drizzle of color like a raspberry swirl. Nikiko's peach stood alone, a single focus of this dessert, uncomplicated, elegant, amazing. Now she understood that perfection could be found in the simple. She'd never look at another peach the same. When Marcy first came to the farm during the summer harvest, I hoped to impress her with our peaches. It worked too well. She loved the fruit, but was initially shocked to see how much we had to cull. Some were bruised, too soft, scarred, misshapen, or small. Her frugal Wisconsin German genes then kicked in. You can't waste this fruit. She wasn't used to the rigors of a commercial orchard and the reality that not all of the fruits will make it to market. So she started a crusade to save them, all of them. She canned, jammed, and froze. She spent hours over the stove making chutney and sauces, syrups and soups, and anything else she could think of. She cooked, baked, and grilled throughout the summer. She dried and pickled peaches. She experimented so much she forgot to label some jars, and we later in the year had mystery peach something. She spent evenings with them instead of me. They were her babies. She was introduced to a family peach farm, and we were introduced to her. Single-handedly, she launched her own fuzz to pit, nose to tail, save the whole peach movement. Today, I think we still might have a jar of mystery peach from those early days. Up high on the shelf in the basement pantry, her passion for all things peaches still sits from that inaugural summer, hidden but not forgotten. Our son Corio was 9 when he became a true peach veteran. He was a small guy, under 4 feet and a scant 50 pounds. But he loved to eat the biggest peaches he could wrap his little hands around. During that hot summer day, he held a huge peach with both hands. Most of his face was hidden behind that monster. He didn't lean over. Instead, the juices squirted over his face. His flesh was smeared with the meat. His cheeks glistened with peach pulp. Then the half-eaten peach slipped out of his slick hands and rolled in the fine dust of the barnyard. Unfazed, he picked up the fallen fruit and returned it to his binge, the earth adding to a new texture. He was consumed by the consuming. Later, when he lowered the fruit and grinned, our old farm dog Jake, an aging golden retriever, pulled himself up from sunning, moseyed over to the boy, and proceeded to lick clean the sticky face with long, even strokes. Corio closed his eyes during the tongue bath, a proper conclusion to his amazing peach feast. My grandmother taught me how to eat a peach. She'd peel an overripe gem with a small knife, creating a dangling ribbon of skin as she rotated the fruit in her calloused hand. Sometimes she would stop, look up, and glance to check if anyone was looking. Then she'd sneak a slice of the golden flesh and slip it into her mouth. She would close her eyes and a gentle grin would cross her face. She wore a look of comfort, a glow as she savored the taste. When she opened her eyes and saw me, she smiled and offered me a peach slice. I shared a perfect moment with my grandmother. Closing my eyes, licking my lips, I too lost myself in the flavor I wanted to last forever. So when did you lose your peach virginity?
I'm Nikiko, and the first piece I'm going to share is the head note for the peach mint lassi recipe. My mom, Marcy, and I wrote each recipe with a head note, which is like a short introduction or story about the recipe. Here is peach mint lassi. Every summer, we drop off peaches on our neighbor's front steps, a bucket of our best gushers. We participate in an unspoken gift economy, as my dad calls it. In return, we have received things like homemade tamales, spring rolls, pomegranate jelly, and dolmas. These exchanges help to explain the terroir of the Central Valley, not only by its climactic and topographical growing conditions, but also by the human geography of food production. For centuries in California, immigrants have and continue to shape our food system fundamentally. I am thankful for the generosity of my neighbors and our farm workers and the food traditions we bring and teach each other. Lassi is a drink that ties the Central Valley to South Asia. There are infinite versions, some savory and some sweet. My humble interpretation is inspired by the mango lassi, with peaches replacing the mango and the addition of some mint from our garden. I hope the policies that govern our borders will one day mirror the pleasures of sharing foods across culture, place, and heritage. Without our neighbors, without immigrants, our recipes, our farm, and our valley could not survive.
This is Marcy. I'd like to share with you lessons I have learned cooking with peaches. When I first came to the farm, I tried to save every peach that dropped in the orchard and every one that was not fit for packing and selling commercially. Finally, after years of painstaking cooking and preserving, I realized there was no way I could save all the orphaned or special needs peaches from our 25 acres of orchards. Now, after 30 years of working with peaches in this farmhouse kitchen, here are a few lessons to guide you as you work and cook with peaches. First, it helps if you get to know your peaches, where they're from, when they were picked, how they were handled, and the attributes of those you have in hand to determine the best use of that peach. If you start with a great peach, you can end with a great tasting dish. Flavor should trump aesthetics. The less you do to a good tasting peach, the better. The more you work with a particular variety, the better you will know its best uses and what adjustments you need to make to recipes. Some peaches peel easier than others. Typically, older varieties and riper peaches will peel easier than newer varieties and less ripe fruit. Some peaches are sweeter than others, some more tart. Where your peaches fall on the sweet-tart spectrum will dictate how much sweetener and or acid you will need to add to a recipe. Some peaches are juicier than others. The degree of juiciness will determine how much thickener you will need to add to your baked goods. If you talk to a farmer, produce manager, or an old-timer with a backyard tree, you may be able to find good-tasting, older varieties that remind you of the ones you ate with your grandmother or grandfather when you were a kid, or that you picked right from the tree way back when. And finally, yes, you can eat too many peaches at one time, which will likely lead to a stomach ache. Every summer, we Masumotos find that we need to lay off peaches for a few days during the harvest to give our digestive tracts a rest. I do not recommend eating more than 2 or 3 peaches a day.
It's Nikiko again. My next piece is another recipe head note about my relationship with my great-grandmother. Peach Day Pickles. In 2011, I took my first trip to Japan with my mom, dad, and brother. We visited relatives in the small village of Takamura in Kumamoto Prefecture, where one of my great-grandmothers was born and spent her childhood. Driving from the train station to the family farmhouse, I looked out the window to see a flat, sweeping basin of cultivated land under the protective gaze of distant mountains. I felt at home. The scene looked similar to the view from our farm in the Central Valley, bordered by the towering Sierra Nevada. Many years ago, as my oba-san, great-grandmother, worked on the same land that I work today, I wonder if she looked up at the Sierra and thought for a second that she, too, was home. But she lived and toiled in these fields when anti-Asian racism was legalized by the California Alien Land Laws of 1913 and 1920, laws that prohibited Asian immigrants from owning land in the state. Asians were not wanted, not welcomed. And yet, here I am, a fourth-generation Japanese-American, and I call this place home. The roots of this recipe come from tsunomono, a lightly pickled Japanese cucumber salad I grew up eating. I wish I could share it with my oba-san. I wonder if her spirit is still in these fields, imagining that she is home.
Hi, this is Mas, and here's my story, Ghosts of Farm Workers. The ghosts of farm workers haunt my fields. I see them in the fading light at dusk, trudging homeward after a long, sweaty workday. I also feel them on cold, bitter, foggy mornings, huddled around a makeshift fire of burning stumps and branches, trying to warm stiff hands before attacking another row that needs pruning. I hear their whispers, reminding me of the hours of labor needed to grow a harvest, the hands that touch and nurture peaches as they evolve from blossoms to tiny green fruit and eventually lush, bulbous, fat, and juicy treasures. A great peach only comes from the many hands of farm workers. They're invisible, forgotten, alone, even as they methodically march through the fields. Without these unseen hands, we would not have peaches. My grandparents and parents were farm workers, immigrants to a foreign land with a history of exploiting cheap laborers, then casting them aside and importing another source of strong backs and fast hands. Our family lost everything with the brutal uprooting of World War II relocation and the forced removal of all Japanese Americans from the Pacific coast because they looked like the enemy. The government believed the invisible were justified casualties of the war. My father and I often worked side by side with the laborers, sharing the sweat, yet acutely aware of our class differences. I, the farmer, they, the farm workers. Today, those who work the land are more respected, but that doesn't always translate into higher income and wages. We're all caught in a vicious economic system of inexpensive food and farmers trying to compete in a system that breaks relationships down into monetary transactions. Each year, farmers strive to work more efficiently and productively. They push to exploit every opportunity, sometimes driving themselves, their families, and their workers too hard and long. The landscape is then filled with more and more ghosts, farmers who grew depressed from the never-ending pressures of the physical work, and farm workers who were broken from the long, brutal hours in the fields. Yet in the fields, the work continues. People labor in silence, rarely asking for more, seemingly content. Of course, they're invisible. The workers have left their mark on our trees and vines. We have 90-year-old grapevines that bear the pruning scars from decades of workers. My grandparents may have worked these vines as common laborers. Now I'm the farmer and live with this legacy and stain. I hope things are changing. Organic farming and a new interest in food has resulted in better prices and more scrutiny. Workers may come out of the shadows, light shined on their faces. I dream of fair trade policies with progressive peaches and radical raisins. Imagine sharing a great meal with ghosts of farm workers. Ghosts become part of the conversation. Their stories belong alongside great chefs and cooks. The culinary arts can only truly evolve when all the hands of the workers are respected. All the arts must have less ego, must be less self-centered, be more communal in nature. That's not how the arts are typically portrayed today, and that's why the culinary arts can be different, more respectful, engaging on a new level that transcends the visual and oral arts. Imagine tasting and feeling art and at the same time connecting with the story behind the foods. The potential excites. The new currency of good food may be hope and change. Ghosts stay with me in the fields. Perhaps my contribution is to tell the story of the invisible. I know that one day I too will become a ghost.
This is Marcy again. This segment reflects one of my passions, preserving foods. It's entitled, Preserving Peaches Starts Here. My mother grew up on a Wisconsin dairy farm before and during the Great Depression, where she learned how to make the most out of plentiful farm-fresh products for daily meals and how to preserve the remainder for enjoying throughout the year. Her neighbors called her the food preservation expert because she canned, dehydrated, pickled, and froze all kinds of foods every year, from fruits and vegetables to meats and dairy products. She also shared her expertise with others, young and old alike. Mom was the local food preservation project leader and state resource for 4-H clubs in Wisconsin, California, and Arizona, states in which she lived for more than 25 years each, and for many years taught courses in food preservation at two community colleges, training generations of food service personnel, homemakers, and farm enthusiasts. With that type of expertise in the family, I couldn't have possibly grown up without learning a few things myself. The truth about preserving foods for me is that while nothing is better than a high-quality fresh product, good preserved foods are far better than poor quality and off-season, not-so-fresh products. Although consumers have allowed the food industry to do most of the work in this era, the quality of products and the options have become extremely limited in the marketplace. For example, we can no longer find peach jam in our local supermarkets, and commercial frozen peaches are beautiful but lack deep flavor. So if you have access to great quality fresh peaches, I believe you're better off bringing home a lot of them and putting in a little time preserving them, canning, jamming, freezing, drying, to enjoy at a later date. I fear that the art of preserving food in the home kitchen is near extinction, and I'm happy to share with you, my fellow peach lovers, what has become intuitive for me.
I'm back. It's Nikiko. I'm happy to read the next headnote for Panko Fried Peaches. I call this hapa food. The term hapa is deliciously slippery. It is often used to describe mixed-race Japanese Americans, but not always. For me, being Hapa provides a way of claiming a whole racial and ethnic identity, as opposed to thinking of myself as just or only half and half. I am a whole person, and my experience of race, culture, and nationality is more complicated than adding fractions. This dish did not emerge from a place of separation in which two disparate things were fused together, but rather from the co-constitution, interdependence, and wholeness of my life as a Hapa growing peaches in the United States and cooking from my multiple cultural and racial lineages that go far beyond this country's borders. I have learned to make and cook my own path. Biting into this treat is like unleashing a burst of glowing peach wrapped in a crunchy cocoon. When we step outside of rigid categories, possibilities are infinite, no?
I'm back with Moss's stupid mistakes I have made on the farm. Admitting errors can make you question your abilities, challenge your confidence, and hurt your business. Yet it also makes your work more human. We farmers work intimately with both nature and human nature, ensuring that our life's calling is filled with lessons. Mistake number one. Believing trees would tell me if they're hungry or thirsty. Usually by the time they show symptoms, it's too late. They'll abort their crop when threatened. Mistake number two, thinking too much when planting wildflowers on the farm. They're beautiful early to bloom in the spring and can find niches to grow in and thrive. But if you planted them, can they still be wildflowers? Mistake number three, trusting stickers. Years ago, some large grocery stores demanded we sticker our peaches. We had to apply on each peach one of those little labels with the price lookup code. But our heirloom peaches often had lots of fuzz, and early on, some of the food-grade adhesives were not very good. I remember driving down the road with a truckload of peach boxes and watching thousands of stickers flying off in the wind. Cars behind me were weaving, trying to dodge the Masumoto Family Farm stickers so they wouldn't adhere to their windshields. Mistake number four, failing to follow a straight line. In 1968, when I was a kid, I helped my father plant our Suncrest orchard a peach with amazing taste. His rows were straight. He took his time. My rows were a little crooked, but it didn't matter to an impatient teenager. Decades later, I still have to swerve around the trees that are not lined up correctly and thus lean too far to one side and are not lined up straight. I always imagine my father watching me.
This is Nikiko. I'll finish my reading with an essay from the last chapter of the book entitled Harvest Memories. This is a story about family memory and peach preserves. The Night Shift. In mid-July between 9 and 10 o'clock, the throbbing summer sun finally tucks itself beyond the coastal mountains west of the Central Valley. My feet, still swollen from standing outside most of the day, slowly begin to pulse back to their normal size. The dark brings a small respite from the heat. But this reprieve doesn't mean we sleep long, luxurious hours in the cool of night. Instead, we start our second job. It's the perfect time for peach preservation. After our late-night dinners and showers, we pull out pots and pans, buckets of peaches, paring knives, and the puree attachment to our blender. Then we crank up the heat. We boil canning jars and shiny metal lids in one pot and the thick peach puree made from our best gushers in the second. On the other side of the farm, my Ba-chan grandma sleeps. She has already put in decades of night shifts with my Ji-chan, grandpa. Now, she uses the cool mornings to put up her peaches in simple syrup and freezes them in bulging plastic pouches. Every summer, she makes enough to last for the rest of the year. Before my Ji-chan died, every morning they would eat a heaping spoonful of peach preserves on top of hot bowls of oatmeal. When I lived with them after college, I often shared their morning routine. Against the hearty oats, the peach preserves burst on my tongue. The texture brought me back to the heat, sweat, and satisfaction of summer harvests when we can taste the results of a year of hoping and working. When my Ji-chan grew old, I believe that eating peach preserves every morning helped him remember what he had created and sustained as long as his body allowed, a family farm worth preserving. The year he died, my Ba-chan worried about not being able to finish all the preserves that she had prepared the previous summer for the two of them. I told her not to worry, that as a family, we'd help eat last summer's harvest. We shared the burden of loss by filling our bodies with food memories meant for my Ji-chan. Our farm owls must think we're their nocturnal cousins. The barn owl cuts silently through the fields like a ghost. The shimmering white body dashes between the bright moon and the dark earth in search of a meal. With much less grace than the birds, we also thrust ourselves into our night shift. Like them, we capture food treasures in the dark and stillness of summer nights. We clang metal pots, hum with the sound of puree, and blurt out estimated jarring times like cranky short-order cooks. We work together to fill and seal jars of golden orange summer. Making peach preserves on our farm is about family labor. It's a ritual of optimism, futurity, and haunting. We steal the night to transform fresh peaches into memories, hoping to preserve an essence of what was once alive. When we're done, dozens of jars cool on our dining room table. I'm tired, but as I trudge home, I feel fulfilled. I know that in a few months, those jars will be magical, each one a small time capsule that allows us to eat the past. But it's not just the past summer's peaches that I recall when I open a jar. It's my Ji-chan, too. Peach preserves give me another way to remember him.
Thanks for letting us share our stories from the Masumoto family farm. This is Mas, and I'd like to close with Leaving Behind Stories. Dear children, when I die, what will I leave behind for you? The things I cherish are stories and memories, the breakfast on a porch, a farm walk, sharing the first ripe peach of the season, the juices running down your faces. We lived in a world rich in details and authentic emotions, memories alive and embedded in a story. That's the legacy I hope to leave. What will forever be part of my story? The land. Yet our farm isn't full of huge profits. As I've grown older, I've come to realize it is not success that I want to leave behind. Rather, it is significance. I want to be remembered as someone who loved and worked the earth and hoped to keep a farm a farm. Imagine forever altering the landscape by keeping it the same, a farm that retains its identity in a region, holds onto a piece of the region's history, to know who we are because we have a sense of where we are. I want farms to show where food is grown and remind people places still matter. Future generations may want to see and feel that story and know where their daily nourishment comes from. Open spaces have a magical quality. Imagine for a moment standing in the sunshine and breathing in the air. See the green of nature and smell the freshness of spring or the ripeness of summer. Long to taste something real and honest. A family farm is not much different from an old-growth forest or a historical site, a sacred place, a voice shouting out that we count, we matter. Farm memories are buried in the land. Dreams live in my fields. I hope to romance the next farm generation. There's something important here, an activism in the fields. Grow food and be radical. Raise a family out in the country and keep something right. Leave behind a memory and keep alive a story of significance. Your dad.
Friends, we've just heard from three members of a really remarkable and committed farm family who run a small farm in Del Rey, just southeast of Fresno. They grow wonderful peaches and Thompson grapes that are dried into delicious raisins. As we heard, this family is totally invested in the challenging work of planting, tending to, and harvesting their extraordinary crops. And for them, you know, it's a lot more than just an 8-to-5 job. Family has become their lifestyle and inspiration. They've learned, oftentimes the hard way, all about nature's ways as they make their living from the crops they tend to so lovingly. Of course, it was quite clear that tonight's story was about farming here in the San Joaquin Valley. So let me briefly remind everyone that when it comes to agriculture, we live in a really remarkable place because it's estimated that our valley is the single richest farming region, not just in the United States, but probably in the world. About every one of 400 agricultural commodities produced in California are produced right here in the San Joaquin Valley, where just about every single county is among the most productive agricultural counties in the country. Well, as we heard, the Masamotos remember their parents, who against many odds started the farm. They're constantly amazed by nature's beauty and bounty. They're grateful to their ancestors, grateful to the hardworking farmhands that helped them at harvest time, and are unwavering in working hard to keep their farm healthy and productive. We wish them and all of their many, many Valley Farm neighbors continued success. Friends, David Moss Masumoto has published at least 8 books, most of them about his inspirational life out on the farm. He's also a frequent writer for the Sunday edition of the Fresno Bee. We here at Valley Writers Read have had Moss as well as the members of his family on our show numerous times. We enjoy their writing and encourage them to send us more of their remembrances for future programs. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read program again, just get online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our writer reader will be Judy Ryan. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.